There was a sea change in the financial system from which we have not recovered.
Says the resulting climate change from carbon dioxide emissions will be essentially irreversible for 1,000 years or more.
It has been a succession of bad news, right? The question is, what are the worst news?
If every nation were to make good on its existing promises, if they were able to, and there's no indication yet that we are, we would still see atmospheric carbon dioxide levels well above 600 parts per million, 50% above where we are today. This translates into global temperatures at least 4 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, and no one in the scientific community disputes that this would be catastrophic.
That is the voice of Senator John Kerry, chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and you are about to get 20 minutes of the latest from Al Gore.
It's conceivable that our country could go into depression greater than the Great Depression.
Surely this is one of the worst times to talk about climate change. According to the IMF, the international banking system is teetering on the brink of disaster. Really, we're just propping up the illusion. 65,000 Americans laid off in one day this week. Now predictions that 50 million humans will lose their jobs in 2009. Where I live, construction crews have walked away from unfinished buildings and they're going to stay that way, the ghost buildings. The government is rushing in to operate a bankrupt pulp mill with no visible owner before the chlorine blows up. The Jack Nicholson golf course and the condos will never open. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that was all the fake world that was poisoning nature. Britain is going bankrupt. Who can compete with a headline like that? Top world scientists now tell us that the natural world is dying. In just one example, trees in the western United States are being killed by climate change. In fact, the whole West is heading into a drought that may last hundreds of years. Cows are falling over dead in Texas, finding nothing in the dried-up vegetation. Bush's home state is headed for climate disaster. The Obama administration is rushing to undo the damage of 8 years of denying science, of muzzling and firing top scientists, of wantonly lying to the public about the bankruptcy of our atmosphere. In a flurry of appointments, the deniers have been cast out, the actual scientists and experts appointed to a wide range of posts, all pointing towards climate action. Even foreign affairs, as we'll now hear from John Kerry, depends upon saving the climate.
Military leaders and intelligence officials have been sounding the alarms. They describe climate change as a threat multiplier, and they're warning that the cost of ignoring this issue will be more famine, more drought, more widespread pandemics, more natural disasters, more resource scarcity, and human displacement on a massive scale. In other words, our military leaders predict more of the very drivers that exacerbate conflict worldwide and create failed states, which, as we all know too well, present glaring targets of opportunity for the worst actors in our international system. That endangers all of us. Marine Corps General Anthony Zinni, former commander of our forces in the Middle East, says that without action, and I quote, "we will pay the price later in military terms, and that will involve human lives. There will be a human toll." More immediately, as the new administration sets a new tone with the global community, this issue will be an early test of our capacity to exert thoughtful, forceful, diplomatic, and moral leadership on any future challenge that the world faces.
That is why the Senate Foreign Relations Committee invited former Vice President Al Gore to testify on January 28, 2009. He spoke for 27 minutes and then answered questions for another 2 hours. We'll just hit the highlights. You can download the testimony and the full Q&A as free MP3 files from our website, ecoshock.org. After Kerry's introduction, Republican Richard Lugar of Indiana spoke. Now that the public knows climate change is real, Lugar can't trot out a denial. Instead, he promoted big bucks for biotech. Lugar said Africans will starve without biotechnology. He wants America to pressure Europe, forcing open their markets to lab-made food. Just a lobby announcement, I'm afraid. Let's clear out our palates with a taste of Al Gore.
We are here today, of course, to talk about how we as Americans and how the United States of America as part of the global community should address the dangerous and growing threat of the climate crisis. We have arrived at a moment of decision. Our home, Earth, is in danger. What is at risk of being destroyed is not the planet itself, of course, but the conditions that have made it hospitable for human beings. Moreover, we must face up to this urgent and unprecedented threat to the existence of our civilization at a time when our nation must simultaneously solve two other worsening crises. Our economy is in its deepest recession since the 1930s, and our national security is endangered by a vicious terrorist network and the complex challenge of ending the war in Iraq honorably while winning the military and political struggle in Afghanistan. As we search for solutions to all three of these challenges, it is becoming ever clearer that they are linked by a common thread, our dangerous over-reliance on carbon-based fuels. If you grab a hold of that thread and pull it, all three of these crises yield a solution, and you hold in your hand the answer, and that is a shift from carbon-based fuels to renewable energy. It is increasingly obvious that this roller coaster is headed for a crash, and we're in the front car. Most importantly, as long as we continue to depend on dirty fossil fuels like coal and oil to meet our energy needs and dump 70 million tons of global warming pollution into the thin shell of atmosphere surrounding our planet, we move closer and closer to several dangerous tipping points which scientists have repeatedly warned, again just yesterday, threatened to make it impossible for us to avoid irretrievable destruction of the conditions that make human civilization possible on this planet. We're borrowing money from China to buy oil from the Persian Gulf and burning it in ways that destroy the planet. Every bit of that has to change. I urge this Congress to quickly pass the entirety of President Obama's recovery package. The plan's unprecedented and critical investments in four key areas: energy efficiency, renewables, a unified national energy smart grid, and the move to clean cars, represent an important down payment and are long overdue. These crucial investments will create millions of new jobs and hasten our economic recovery while strengthening our national security and beginning to solve the climate crisis. The elements that I believe are key to a successful agreement in Copenhagen include, first, strong targets and timetables from industrialized countries and differentiated but binding commitments from developing countries that put the entire world under a system with one commitment to reduce emissions of carbon dioxide and other global warming pollutants that are the cause of the climate crisis. Two, the inclusion of deforestation, which alone accounts for more than 20% of the emissions that cause global warming. Three, the addition of so-called carbon sinks, including those from soils, principally from farmlands and grazing lands, with appropriate methodologies and accounting. Farmers, such as Senator Lugar, and ranchers in the U.S. and around the world need to know that they can be a part of the solution. The scientific community, and most recently the European Space Agency, has pointed out that Earth and Venus are exactly the same size with exactly the same amount of carbon, no more than 400 kilometers difference in circumference, and the carbon quantity is identical. The difference is that on Earth, most of the carbon has been sequestered in the soil, pulled out of the atmosphere by the miracle of life and by the unique geology on Earth, while most of the carbon on Venus is still in the atmosphere. The difference is that the average annual temperature on Earth is 59 degrees, and on Venus it's 855 degrees, and it rains sulfuric acid, not the kind of weather forecast you'd like to wake up to. And it's not because Venus is closer to the sun. It's three times hotter than Mercury, which is right next to the sun. It is, in fact, the CO2. And this is a stark difference that illustrates why it's a problem to follow a global strategy of pulling as much carbon out of the Earth as we possibly can, as quickly as possible, and burning it in ways that leave it in the atmosphere. If we stopped global greenhouse gas emissions today, according to some scientists, and you referred to this, Mr. Chairman, we would see an increase in temperatures that many scientists would believe would be extremely challenging for civilization. If we continued at today's levels, some scientists have said it can be an increase of up to 11 degrees Fahrenheit. This would bring a screeching halt to human civilization and threaten the fabric of life everywhere on the earth. And this is within this century, if we don't change.
Remember, I'm just playing you selected clips from 2.5 hours of testimony. Get the real thing from our website, ecoshock.org. Mr. Gore goes on to explain that the Arctic ice remains at the lowest levels ever seen since the last great ice age. West Antarctica is also warming up, as the latest science shows. And as it melts, along with Greenland, each 1 meter rise of sea level means another 100 million climate refugees, and all that implies. He shows new maps of huge, horrible dead zones developing in our oceans. But you know that. You know. Green 960 AM, in San Francisco and around the world at green960.com. I'm Alex Smith, and this is the Radio EcoShock Show. Naturally, the committee wanted to see what we could do about it. Al Gore did offer a range of solutions. He said solar thermal energy alone could meet the electricity needs of America with just 100 square miles of desert. But we're going to focus on the step he thinks needs to happen first, the construction of a unified national smart grid to distribute the power of renewable energies. Here is John Kerry in dialogue with Al Gore.
Moving more rapidly with respect to that 100-mile zone that you've described. I mean, if you got 100 square miles,
yeah,
that if we properly developed it, we could be completely fossil fuel free in the production of our electricity for the United States. And then we move our automobiles more into the electric grid,
right,
where they're plugging in at night when you're producing the same amount of electricity. That's a revolution.
Right.
In and of itself, with respect to America's national security, the environment, our global climate change, our health, almost every obligation. So you say to yourself, why aren't we doing that?
That's why the first order of business is the approval and construction of this unified national smart grid. Yes, I think we need a national unified system with a large federal role, with preemption being used very carefully, and in support primarily of the renewable electricity options. But yes, that's what we need. The introduction of the Internet kicked off a huge surge of economic growth and job creation. And people talk about the bubble and bust. Well, actually, the sustained long-term creation of jobs and income and economic activity as a result of the Internet and the software explosion that accompanied it and the personal computer explosion and all of the applications, it has been phenomenal. Similarly, the construction of the railroads in the 1800s, the building of the interstate highway system in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, these national unifying infrastructure projects were each accompanied by a wave of sustained economic growth and higher standards of living. The next wave will follow the building of the unified national smart grid. And yes, that in some cases will be the careful and judicious use of preemption with a careful eye toward not having it facilitate more dirty electrons, but put a priority on renewable electricity.
That was Al Gore from testimony to the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, January 28, 2009. You are listening to Radio EcoShock. Later in the program, our guest will be top scientist Peter Tanz. He measures the greenhouse gases.
We must not have any more conventional dirty coal plants that do not capture and sequester a CO2. I proposed, as a member of this body many years ago, a full employment alternative for any coal miners and workers in the coal industry that are displaced by the need to protect the environment of this planet. Just to keep on doing this incredible damage and harm in the name of their jobs, when we can much more effectively create even better jobs for them. That, I believe, must be the response, even as we aggressively research the possibility that it might be possible to capture and sequester carbon.
Well, that's a very direct and honest answer, and I appreciate it. Help us to paint the picture a little bit of where you see, I mean, you're currently doing a lot of work with technologies and looking at the sort of energy sector transformation. Share with us, if you would, sort of the immediate vision that you see in this transformative process as we move to this new economy and new base of power.
The Energy Information Administration, in its report from 2007 on the electric power industry, reported that for the first time, renewable energy sources represented by far the largest new increment of electricity generation in the United States of America. We are beginning to see this shift take place already. Wind power is now mature and fully competitive. It can accelerate its role with the appropriate tax credits and grants to make them usable. And a technology called concentrating solar thermal is now becoming very competitive. Many plants are under construction in the Southwest. And this, of course, uses mirrors to concentrate the solar energy to boil water, just as a nuclear plant or a coal-fired plant does, to drive steam turbines and generate electricity. Scientific American pointed out that if we took an area of the southwestern desert 100 miles on a side, that would be enough in and of itself to provide 100% of all the electricity needs for the United States of America in a full year. And interestingly, this technology matches the peak load exactly throughout the day to the peak load use. So concentrating solar thermal is a very important new source along with wind. And most scientists and engineers expect that the new advances in photovoltaic energy, of course, the kind that directly translate photons into an electrical current, will intersect with concentrating solar thermal midway through this decade. Widely distributed uses of photovoltaics and small wind will also play an increasing role. In all of this, efficiency and conservation must be the number one priority. It gives us the quickest and most cost-effective new sources of energy. Indeed, a lot of it is not only cheap, it actually makes money. And giving the right incentives to use these approaches is very important. I would mention one final source, which is geothermal energy. There are new approaches that fracture the deeper parts of the shelf and create the new sources of geothermal energy. This has great potential. It is not very far off.
I sometimes hear people say, oh, gosh, those are terrific things when I'm trying to describe some of the things you have. And they'll say, well, yeah, but you can't meet the demand fast enough. Those technologies aren't adequately developed yet, or they're not really cost competitive. In each case, you've articulated today that's not true. You can meet it that fast. They are, in fact, competitive, and they're here now.
I chair the Alliance for Climate Protection, and we conducted extensive work with energy modelers and policy experts to prove this case, that if we set our minds to it, we could in this country produce 100% of our electricity from renewable and carbon-free sources within 10 years. That is possible if we set our minds to it. It requires the construction of a national unified smart grid, which gives us two new tools, the ability to transfer large amounts of renewable electricity from the solar areas of the Southwest to the cities where it's used, from the wind corridor in the mountain states, east and west to the cities where it's used, and from the geothermal areas. It would require a decision to move aggressively to give the incentives to quickly build the new concentrating solar thermal and wind facilities that are ready to go right now.
You have just heard a back and forth between Senator John Kerry and Citizen Al Gore in testimony to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Although he has supported a revenue-neutral carbon tax in the past, Mr. Gore testified he thought the cap-and-trade system was the most viable option now. Some European countries and two Canadian provinces have already brought in a carbon tax. The revenue is not kept by the government, but returned to taxpayers. Some Americans are not ready for that or don't trust the government. We need to realize that Al Gore, in addition to his famous role as climate educator, is now a multimillionaire, successful businessman in the green energy field. The industry alliance he represents wants cap and trade. They think they can make money in a pollution market. Given the collapse of self-regulated capitalism, many environmentalists don't trust cap-and-trade either. Part of the focus of this testimony is preparation for the climate conference in Copenhagen, Denmark, in December 2009. That will be the first international opportunity for the new Obama administration to work for a climate solution. However, Al Gore suggested that the U.S. should be negotiating an agreement with China even before Copenhagen. If the two biggest polluters can really reduce carbon, the worst of climate change might be avoided. And Gore says China has seen the green light and is willing to rein in their greenhouse gas emissions. We shall see. While Gore brought out a lot of technical solutions, he made surprising emphasis on the role of protecting the last great forests of Earth. Deforestation causes 20% of our emissions, he says. Gore also wants to see a program where the world's farmers can get credit if they capture more carbon in the soil. There is four times more carbon in the soil than in all the trees. Al Gore told the Senate the top scientists are screaming from the rooftops, "This is our last chance for action to stop a massive heat shift on planet Earth." This week, Dr. James Hansen of NASA wrote to President Obama saying the climate will be saved or lost in the first 4 years of this administration. Other scientists from Germany and Australia, many parts of the world, have the same angst, the same conclusion of deadline, the need for swift action. The most dire comes from one of the oldest voices, Sir James Lovelock, the inventor of the Gaia hypothesis, that living things regulate their own climate. He told New Scientist magazine that we have, quote, one last chance. In fact, Lovelock worries it is already too late for emissions reductions. He doesn't trust carbon trading at all and has given up even his love for nuclear power. The only hope he sees is a giant program to bury charcoal in the earth, agrochar. But Lovelock doesn't think that will happen either. He expects a cull of human population dropping down to perhaps a billion souls or less surviving. Lovelock told Gaia Vince of the New Scientist, quote, "We have the example of the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum. That was an event 55 million years ago. About the same amount of CO2 was put up into the atmosphere as we are putting in. And temperatures rocketed by about 5 degrees centigrade over about 20,000 years. The world became largely desert. The polar regions were tropical, and most life on the planet had time to move north and survive. When the planet cooled, they moved back again, so there doesn't have to be a massive extinction. It's already moving. If you live in the countryside, as I do, you can see the changes, even in the UK." End quote from Sir James Lovelock. I'm Alex Smith, and this is Radio EcoShock. Hey, did you want me to lie to you and make it all pretty with some sugar coating? The climate situation is far more serious than any banking scandal. That is why Al Gore went to Washington. Get tons of free MP3 downloads from our site at ecoshock.org. ECO, shock like an electric shock. It's radioactive.